How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
We have scheduled Iran talks, and they want to talk. They took a big drubbing, I think, when we hit the three sites. Really, they want to meet. They want to meet. They want to work something out. Now they're different. They're very different now than they were 2 weeks ago. They were the bully of the Middle East, and now they're not the bully anymore.
President Trump on Iran after, of course, a successful strike against the nuclear facilities. These are comments he made yesterday while he was sitting at a table right across from Bibi Netanyahu. Let's get to our friend Jim Carafano, who I don't think we've talked to since the strikes in Iran. He's a senior counselor to the president and E.W. Richardson Fellow for International Engagement at the Heritage Foundation. Jim, I hope you had a wonderful 4th of July, Independence Day weekend. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, so we should start with, go through the list of all the things that made Iran a power broker in the region and a threat. The surrogates. Okay, you know, the Houthis, the Hamas, all of them whacked. The oil revenue, most of it cut off. The death from a barrage of missiles. Well, they expended more than 50% of their inventory. They lost most of their launcher capability. The backing of Russia and China. Okay, that proved it to be a joke. And global terrorism. Well, you know, Trump's been quietly plinking Al-Qaeda and ISIS guys for months. And so literally, and the nuclear program, which has now been set back who knows how long. Everything that made Iran powerful and a factor in 6 months has basically been taken off the table. It's like if everybody on the... I don't even know a good baseball team these days. Like everybody on the Red Sox, the entire lineup, you know, came down with strep throat before the World Series. You know, they're toast.
Was Iran as strong? I mean, as dangerous, I guess is maybe the right word. Were they as big of a threat as they positioned themselves to be perceived?
Absolutely. But, you know, it's like a Jenga puzzle, right? Which is actually, when all the pieces are in place, it's actually a very stable structure. But when you take all the pieces out of place, it tumbles like a house of cards. So all those things together made Iran a difficult country to go after. But when you remove them all from the table, it really makes Iran almost a non-factor in the region for, it could be years to come.
Yesterday, Netanyahu handed across the dinner table to President Trump his nomination for him for the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, we've seen some people be awarded that prize, and it's kind of a head scratcher. Does that mean anything in 2025 to you?
No, absolutely not. I think it's a joke. It's a highly politicized joke. I think we all get the joke. I'm sure Trump, I don't know if he'd be happy to. You know, he said the other day, the thing that matters to me is that the people that voted for me think I'm doing a good job. And I think that's absolutely true. It's a one-day news thing. If they give him the Nobel Peace Prize, it'll be one day of news and then we'll move on. You know, most of the world hates Donald Trump, which is shocking if you think about it, because of all the good things that he has done, not just for the United States, but for friends and allies, and all the example that he has set for other leaders. But you have failed institutions all over the world, which are just vicious to hold on to their place, and they'll attack Trump at any cost. You have a global media that just regurgitates this negativity over and over again. And then you have an administration which is so busy doing things that they really don't take time out to really convince and explain to the rest of the world why what they're doing is good. And the Nobel Peace Prize is not going to change that.
Right.
So I don't care. You know, the Pakistanis is completely cynical. The only reason why the Pakistanis nominated him was to annoy the Indians. This is a completely cynical joke. And I'm sure the Israeli nomination is quite sincere, because Trump has done more to bring, you know, the future to the Middle East than anybody. And that is truly if there is a reason to give somebody a peace prize that is truly noteworthy and notable, so good for them for that. But does it really matter? No, it doesn't matter at all.
Over the weekend, certainly leading into the 4th of July, we were anticipating the passage of the Big Beautiful Bill, and the president got to sign it on the 4th of July like he had committed to. Right in the midst of that, maybe right before it, we were told that we were going to pull back on supplying Ukraine with what they needed. And then I believe it was today or maybe yesterday, we find out, okay, we're back in business. Can you tell me what's going on there?
Fuck no. Oh, wait.
Yeah, go on.
completely bleep that out.
Yeah.
I have no
We got you. Idea. We got you covered.
I have no idea what's going on. Yeah, here's what I will say. I always said, in the end, the U.S. will support Ukraine because it's in America's interest. And if there's one thing that Donald Trump does, it is he puts America's interest first. And so I never doubted for a second that the U.S. would support Ukraine. But why what happened, I don't know.
It's a head-scratcher for you?
It is. I mean, I've heard all kinds of things, and I don't know who to believe and what ground truth is. But in the end of the day, I paid no attention to it. I believe that Donald Trump was going to stand up for Ukraine because it was in America's interest to do so in a smart way, and he gets that.
We're speaking with Jim Carafano with the Heritage Foundation. We got you covered.
By the FCC.
We got you covered. There's a button, and we got you covered. Apologize if we didn't, but I'm pretty sure we did. I do like the sincerity, though, of the response. I feel like I really got the honest reaction there from Jim Carafano.
Well, that's true.
I want to know your thoughts on the thumbprint on history. It's going to be easier to measure down the road, of course, when Donald Trump is just a part of the history books. But it seems as though he's taking a full-on aggressive reshaping mentality towards how America interacts with the world, what we stand for, what we care about, what we don't care about. Is he changing? I mean, how big is his impact on the course of history right now?
Well, I do think it's transformative, and in two ways, in all sincerity, all joking and embarrassments aside. One is, we have meandered through the world since the end of the Cold War, trying to find our direction and our focus, not just what's good for America, what is America's place in the world. And I think because we have a president who has been president and then had time to think about it and then come back and is sincere in his love of America, gets it, understands it, is actually a very good global strategist. So he is, I think, bringing a direction to American foreign policy that we have been trying to figure out for decades. The second thing is I think, and again, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I don't have a dog in the fight, I swear. The Biden administration did enormous damage to America's prestige, our economic prosperity, and our security in the world. And Trump is bound to determine to fix that. And I think he will be remembered for both of those things.
He's been direct and harsh in his reactions to Vladimir Putin, of course. When the conflict was escalating with Iran, Donald Trump told the story that Putin called and was like, hey, do you need any help? I can offer you help. And he said, I need help with you. And then today at the cabinet meeting, he reiterated his dissatisfaction and frustration with Vladimir Putin. Where do you see that relationship going and impacting the war that Russia is inflicting on Ukraine?
South. Look, this is not the Vladimir Putin that Trump knew in his first term. The Vladimir Putin that Trump dealt with in his first term was smart enough to get out of the way and not poke Donald Trump. The Putin we have now has made massive strategic errors, and he is in too deep. And so this is not the same guy. This isn't the guy that can just back off and wait another day because he is way overcommitted himself. It's like in The Godfather Part One, everything is talk until you try to kill the Don, and then you've crossed the Rubicon. Well, once they killed Luca Brasi, they crossed the line, and that I think is Putin has crossed the line that he can't return from, and so Trump just can't go to him like he did 4 years ago and just say, dude, back off. And I think, you know, that was the hope. But you know, Trump is, you know, Trump tests propositions. And if he thinks he can settle a problem in a way, he tries it. And then it's, you know, that's not going to work. Putin. Look, Putin may just step up one day and make a deal because honestly, it's a smart play. But he may not. And, you know, what he has done, and he has absolutely teed off the president of the United States, and we've seen how that ends again and again. and the answer is not well.
Yes.
For some people.
Jim Carafano speaking with us right now. The last subject I want to talk to you about here real quick before we let you go is something that you and I spoke about every week under the Biden administration, which was the border on our own country and the immigration into our country. And it's the big stories of our foreign policy interactions and, of course, striking nuclear facilities in Iran. Those are huge, huge stories. But on the home front, this administration has stayed the course. How do you feel about the commitment to deport those people who are here illegally? And what advice do you want the administration to take on how they should continue?
Well, look, I think what they're doing is exactly right. And I know there'll be a time to talk about temporary worker programs and reforming the current system, and I think that'll be after the midterm. I mean, if the U.S. does, if the Republicans do well in the midterm, they hold the House, they hold the Senate, Trump has proven he can control the border, then we can start to talk about temporary worker programs and legal migration, on ways to kind of get employers the employees they need when they need them to keep the economy growing. But that, I think we are still down the road from that. And in the meantime, we need to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, it's not just about immigration and border security. Every day the left attacks Trump for doing what most Americans want and is clearly in the interests of the United States of America. We are rewriting the political balance in this country.
Is there any sort of people will say amnesty, and usually when it's used, it's not really in a positive connotation. Is there any sort of residency establishment that you think should be offered people who did come here illegally?
I think the only fair and responsible thing, either if you want to participate in a temporary worker program or if you'd like to come to the United States legally and you're here unlawfully, is that you must leave, go to your home country, and apply to come back in a regular way. Mm-hmm. Now, if people want to set up a system where it says, I trust this person, it's a good person, you know, they should maybe get, you know, they move, you know, they're ahead of the line because this is somebody that we know is good and we want them back, that's fine. But I think people should have to leave.
Yeah, okay.
And come back to them. Get in line, like, you know, and come back. I mean, it's, that's there.
Well, Jim, it's good to have you back. You came in like a wrecking ball. We're always glad to have you here. We got Tuesday next week cleared for you.
Yeah. No, I'm here like for another month and a half. So there you go.
We're grateful for you, Jim. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Take care. Right,
thanks for being so tolerant.
No problem. Yeah. Hopefully the FCC is as well. Just kidding. We got it. Brad was on it. If you get on YouTube, you get the unfiltered version of the show. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Ryan Wiggins will be back in studio. We will kind of pick up from there on our YouTube live chat poll. How should the Trump administration handle the illegal immigration crisis? Do you want them to deport all illegal immigrants? Now, I will add to that option there what we just heard from Jim Carafano. If you deport people who are here illegally, that doesn't mean that you're initially saying in sum total, you can never come back. Do you want to see, if you're here illegally, you have to go away. You can come back maybe, depending on the circumstances, but if you're here illegally, you must be deported. The second option is legal status for some workers or pathway to citizenship. Can't wait to see how much that one pulls in today on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat poll. Let's talk about it when we come back. Leave your comments. We'll be right back.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Ethan's got it. For the Jonas Brothers and Justin Bieber, you just know. I love it. I just like that Ethan picks it. When he hosts on that one Friday, it's going to be all Jonas Brothers and Bieber. The 97.1 audience is going to flock to that day.
There's nothing we can do about it.
I love that music. I love it. I'm happy that I permitted myself to let go of picking the music because it takes a lot of time. To be super specific about it, but he plays music that is young, and I'm like, that's a good song.
He's not much of a fan of the Jonas Brothers I am. I didn't even know that was the Jonas Brothers.
I looked over there, and it says Nick Jonas. I don't know if it's Jonas Brothers, but it is a Jonas brother.
Oh, okay. Is Nick the cute one? Or is he the bad boy?
That's what Ethan always says. I don't know. I just
Ethan just let us know. Ethan's probably going to say cute one to all of them, though.
YouTube live chat poll for today on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. How should the Trump administration handle the illegal immigration crisis? Word on X, which means pretty much nothing these days, is that Charlie Kirk has put this out there. I saw Steve Bannon kind of talking about it, that they're trying to work in an amnesty bill. This feels very, like I'm having flashbacks to all of the other presidents, all the other Republicans we've elected over time who say, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And they get there like, how about we do that?
Yeah.
And you're going, what? I don't think Trump's that guy.
I don't either. And the minute I saw, I told Brad this morning because we were talking about Charlie Kirk posting about this. The minute he posted about it, I said, okay, A, not sure whether that was true or not. But if it is, it definitely is going to happen now. Because with all the blowback that he would get from the core of the base,
they know so much. The Trump administration and the Trump campaign know so much about social media, and they know how to, I would assume, let people in. You give somebody a little lead on something and you can prove a point. Like, I would assume that the outrage of some people right now on amnesty, I didn't even think we were allowed to say that word in this country anymore, that the outrage is just so that you can be in the next meeting and the cabinet secretaries and President Trump's side eye, whoever this is, fill in the blank here and be like, see, no, we're not doing that. And then it never becomes a thing because they've scooped the interest in the story. But the question remains, how should the Trump administration handle the illegal immigration crisis? Without answering the question specifically, separate question for you, Ryan. Is there any sort of emotional sentiment you have that you've experienced watching this happen where you hear a story and you kind of wince and you're like, oh, God, I don't love that.
I'm glad you asked that question because, yes, that does happen. That should happen. The problem is that you have these factions of people on the left, and some of them are part of that however many percent, 25%, who are just, I mean, they really are deranged Trump haters. It doesn't matter the issue. They don't even really have any deeper thought than did Trump do it? Oh, then I hate it. But that's not every Democrat. What drives me crazy is the Democrats who will bring those issues up and say, are you heartless? The answer is no, I'm not heartless, but where have you been for the last 4 years in allowing this problem to fester and grow into this massive problem that our country has to deal with now? And now you have a heart, and now you want to tell everybody else that they have to have a heart. That's what drives me crazy, is that the people who caused this problem are the ones who usually bring that question up. And I don't feel obligated to answer it when they're the ones bringing it up.
I struggle deeply with the, there are people in my life who I love dearly. I assume, I don't know that they love me dearly anymore. I mean, if you're on this side of the aisle, it just by virtue of your location on the wrong side of the aisle, you're evil to them.
Yeah.
And I know there are people who feel that way about me. I know there are people who feel that way about me who've never said it to me, but have said it to other people. I don't think I'm a heartless person. I really want to create a system where people who have come here illegally but have contributed while they are here, have been outside of the illegal entry, good stewards, I was going to say good citizens, but they're not citizens, good stewards of their time, they've paid the taxes, they've complied, they've, you know, they're good people, and they, in many cases, by our own negligent government, were invited to come here. I put a lot of the responsibility on the leadership of this country for, like, they're the ones who are the bad people in that situation. It's not the fact that you came here and you came here outside of a system. I don't think that you're, that inherently makes you a bad person. It's kind of a judge lest ye be judged scenario in my mind. But the country can't sustain this. And I don't know how you really start picking and choosing. Like, how bad do you have to be to stay here? I've said this before, what I would like to see is a system set up to address people kind of in lieu of what Jim Carofano was saying there, or maybe there are sponsorships that are set up where if you can have sponsorships in good standing who can vouch for you, that you can get back in a line to come back in the country. But I also don't think that that a single one of them should enter before somebody who tried to do it legally did. If it takes years to do the system the right way, maybe we need to consider, is that the appropriate amount of time? Because maybe it is. Can that be expedited? I do know that we were managing people's retirements in a cave somewhere with paper. So the possibility exists that we are not efficient in the way that we bring people into this country. Can we make it in a more efficient system without degrading the quality of the vetting of people who come into this country? And, you know, I could potentially even say there could be an expedited process for people to leave, to apply for a status to come back in. But if you want some sort of expedited process, there's the understanding that you will never be able to be a citizen. So you get to come back, but you'll never be a citizen. One thing that I think needs to be addressed here more than others is how we count people in our census and allocate the people's voice in our federal government. Because when we're counting all of these people who are here, but not in a legal situation, are they taking from the government? In some cases, but maybe not all, but in many cases, yes. We need to redraw that relationship. Because the reason to deport people who are here illegally is to reestablish the voice of the citizens of this country to be reflective in its federal government and not manipulated by a party that says, to hell with it, everybody come in here, we'll send you to the appropriate places, and we will reap the benefits of being able to have a higher volume voice in our federal government, and therefore tip the scales of control of this country for the future. And then you turn into a socialist country, which is ironically what a lot of these people are fleeing from. It's not like any of this is actually for the betterment of those people. Give me a break. Let's take a quick break here, super quick break. Ryan Schmelz is going to be back with us. We are going to get a recap of the big, beautiful bill now that's done. What's next for Congress? And also, Ryan Schmelz has a personal connection to the tragedy in Texas, and we're going to talk to him about that as well. You don't want to miss it. Ryan Schmelz, the Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent on The Andy Frey Show next.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is The Annie Frey Show. Follow Annie on X at Annie Frey Show.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. We want to get directly to our guest here. Ryan Schmelz joins us once again, Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent. Ryan, the last time we talked to you, we were asking you if you were going to be there all night to cover the big, beautiful bill as it was trying to pass, and you said, I'm going on vacation. And it did take a lot of the evening to get that done. How's Capitol Hill buzzing right now that the big, beautiful bill has been signed into law?
Well, it's pretty quiet because House Speaker Mike Johnson actually sent the House home after this was over. He brought them back for a week that they were supposed to be out, which was 4th of July week, usually a recess there for the holiday. They ended up working all the way through 4th of July. So the House decided to cancel votes. However, you do have the Senate that's still in session. And obviously, I think Democrats are really trying to weaponize this argument that Medicaid is going to take a significant cut here. And there's going to be a significant amount of people who are going to lose their benefits because of it. But what's interesting is you also have Josh Hawley today having a press conference on RECA, which was something he's been fighting for some time now. That was included in the Big Beautiful Bill, which, you know, this was something Republicans struggled to get across the finish line, but now RECA has been funded, and that's probably one of the small things that kind of got forgotten about in this argument, but it's there.
So we're speaking with Ryan Schmelz right now on Capitol Hill. We've seen our senator here in the state of Missouri, Eric Schmidt, talking about the rescissions package. Now that the big, beautiful bill is out of the way, can you give us a baseline definition so that when people hear rescissions package, they can understand what it is that they're discussing?
Right. So a rescissions package is a process which starts with the White House. The White House can send a request for budget cuts or rescissions that have already been appropriated or approved by Congress and essentially cut them out of the federal budget. So in this case, you have Republicans who are pushing for a rescissions package for a number of things. So you've got funding for NPR, funding for PBS. You've also got funding for USAID. What the Trump administration has done is requested that these things be cut from the budget, even though Congress already appropriated those funds. It's a very simple process, too, because you only need 50 votes in the Senate and you only need a simple majority in the House. So there's no way to filibuster this for Democrats. The question is, though, are the votes there? And right now in the Senate, it looks like they're still struggling to get those votes. So there's this idea that the Senate could maybe water this down a little bit, take some of the things out. You know, PBS funding's been a big thing, especially for those who represent areas of rural America, because it's a very valuable tool in rural America. Mm-hmm. So there could be a thought of getting rid of that. But then, of course, if you get rid of that, then you're sending a package back to the House that's less conservative than what it was before. But at the same time, they're trying to cut spending here. So any spending cuts that are included could be good enough for the House. It just depends on what the Senate ultimately does here.
We're speaking with Ryan Schmelz. So when I hear what I hear you saying right now, a lot of the criticisms of the Big Beautiful Bill from some fiscal hawks on the conservative side, they wanted more spending cuts and more spending cuts. When are the DOGE cuts going to be put into the Big Beautiful Bill? It sounds like maybe this is where those fiscal hawks could actually make some hay in getting some of those things signed.
That's absolutely right. This is where you're going to see a lot of the DOGE cuts be codified. And the reason for that is because the reconciliation process, which you saw the one big, beautiful bill pass through, they can only adjust. They can only touch things that are considered mandatory spending. So entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicaid, military, national defense, whether it's Homeland Security or other places, that's the only place in terms of spending cuts you can really touch. So that's kind of a challenge because a lot of those things are not politically sexy to go after. The things that are in the rescissions process, where the DOGE cuts are, that's under discretionary spending, which are things that are a little less politically divisive amongst Republicans, like USAID or certain fund or certain programs in there. The question is, though, you know, this is a small package compared to how big the federal government is. It's only about $9 billion. But did the Trump administration pick the wrong things to put into a very small package for the most part? You know, PBS funding has ended up being very divisive amongst Republicans. There are certain programs in USAID that are under this that have been a big point of debate. They've seemed to have worked those out in some cases, but there just doesn't seem to be enough there to get all Republicans on board, or at least in a very enthusiastic way. You saw a number of them vote no on the House side. And if they get four no votes on the Senate, this thing's done for.
Sure. All right. Ryan Schmelz speaking with us right now. So we've talked about the big, beautiful bill that's passed in the Senate, passed in the House, signed into law by the president last Friday. Now we're discussing the rescissions package. To clarify, that none of these are the budget, correct? The budget is something completely separate. And for those people who are clamoring for a balanced budget, entirely different discussion?
For the most part, yes. So the government is currently funded through the end of September. And right now they're going through what's called the budget process, which would start the next fiscal year early October. And that would be fiscal year 2026 funding. So this would rescind whatever's in fiscal year 2025's funding. So things that are funded between now and the end of the year. Now, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act is not a funding bill or a budget bill. It is a bill that includes government spending in it. So you have obviously the tax cuts, you have the revenue streams, which are spending for the military as well as Homeland Security. And you also have spending cuts in there. But kind of think of it as the bill is its own separate budget, but it's not the true thing that's going to fund the federal government through the next fiscal year. Pretty much the debate is this bill going to pay for itself? Not is it going to pay for the federal government, but it still has implications on things like the national debt and other funding streams, because, you know, these Medicaid cuts or these Medicaid changes are going to become law. Work requirements at the federal level are going to become law. So there are some things that will impact how much money the government can spend or how much, you know, which people or which individuals are getting government benefits or certain entitlement programs, but it's not truly the budget process. That process is actually starting up right now, which we call the appropriations process, which is where they will go through each part of the government, negotiate a bill that would fund it, and try to get the votes to pass it.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much for that. Every once in a while, we need to go over vocabulary words for me. And then, of course, for the rest of the listeners as well who want to brush up. I want to shift gears here because I know that you have a connection to Texas and these the tragedy there. We've discussed this a bit on the show today, but it's hard to cover. It's hard to talk about the details. One tragic story after the other, over 100 people who have lost their lives in this tragic flooding. What is your connection to this? What do you want to highlight?
Well, so I was a volunteer firefighter at my first job in Odessa, Texas, in Midland, Texas. I was a member of the Midland County Northeast Volunteer Fire Department. They are actually there right now on the ground providing aid, assisting in rescue operations, pretty much doing anything that they're needed to do right now. So obviously, I'm very prideful in the fact that I was a part of this organization and knew some of the men who are and women who are on the scene right now. So that's huge. You know, this is kind of common for Texas. We saw this happen when there were some other floods going on in Houston and San Antonio. But this one definitely came as a shock, I think, to a lot of people. And of course, you look at the loss of life. It's terrifying. I mean, it's enough to give you nightmares, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so hard about this right now, especially when you think about the first responders who are on the ground. You know, they already know the details. They know that a number of children have been killed in the dozens, and that death toll is sadly rising. But there's still a lot that are missing. And, you know, there's got to be a thought in their head that they're searching for these children, knowing that if they find them, this could be something that gives them nightmares for the rest of their lives, if it hasn't already given them that. I mean, just the thoughts of what is going on in Texas right now is enough to keep you up at night, right? Yeah. So to think about the first responders who are on the scene, you know, God bless them. They're doing the Lord's work right now, but this is not easy stuff that they're doing. And you've probably seen some of the pictures. Some of these first responders are overwhelmed, not just with the work that they're doing, but also just the emotional toll this is taking on them.
Yeah. You know, Ryan, I think about the preparation to be a first responder, to be a firefighter like you have served. We're grateful for your service in that as well. You can prepare to do all these things, but in a moment like this, I don't think it's humanly possible to really prepare for a tragedy like this, but we still need people who can move into that place and be a helper. And I'm grateful for you bringing up that connection that you have, because those first responders need prayers like the families do, like the community does, to keep and protect them and provide safety for them as they do this mission, but also the toll that this is going to take for a lifetime, honestly, on those people who are there on the ground.
Absolutely. And, you know, you got to think about what, in the situation, a lot of these volunteers who are traveling to the Hill Country are volunteer. So, you know, they're not getting paid for this. They're leaving their families behind to go do this. They are leaving their jobs behind to go do this. This is a big undertaking that they're going through. And it's very important work that they're doing. And obviously, I think everyone's very grateful that they're doing this. But this is a very terrifying situation. You know, I've got a former morning anchor who I shared the air with when I was in Odessa, Midland as a weatherman, believe it or not. She's missing a couple family members and a niece right now. Yeah. So this is hitting close to home for a lot of people. And just to show you the gravity, you know, Camp Mystic was a very popular summer camp. You have Congressman August Pfluger. He had two daughters there. He represents the Odessa Midland area in San Angelo. You also have Buddy Carter, the congressman from Georgia, the one who's running for Senate. He's from Georgia, and he had a granddaughter and other family members who were there. And sadly, he just told us on Fox a few minutes ago, we're going to interview him for a podcast soon, later today. You know, his granddaughter's cousin was one of the people who died. I mean, this is just a very tragic situation in so many ways.
Yeah. The burden is great, but we'll have to share that burden in prayer for certain. Thank you for putting the spotlight on those first responders, those firefighters, especially the fact that a lot of these people are volunteers and they're doing this because it's the right thing to do. And we all pray that if we were ever, God forbid, in a situation like this, that help would be there for us. And those volunteer firefighters and those first responders, they sign up to do that job on day one. We're very grateful for them. Ryan, thank you for being with us here today. It's good to talk to you. Thank you for your service and bringing that to our attention as well.
Hey, thank you, Annie. Anytime.
God bless. Ryan Schmelz is the Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent. He's absolutely right to highlight the life-altering experience that the people who are part of the recovery and rescue operation, this is going to be life-altering for them. It's not something that you don't just, oh, well, it's just part of the job. It's just something you have to do. Like, you can't be human. It's hard to process. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to, let's see here. You guys want to answer the YouTube poll when we come back?
Mm-hmm. I have very strong opinions about this poll.
In the 2 o'clock hour, I'm going to talk about my lucid dream, and you can talk a little bit about Controlium. I'm going to give you that highlight in the 2 o'clock hour. We're also going to talk about the Superman movie, which ironically I didn't know about until James Gunn decided to promote his movie. Not to me. I wonder if you've heard this. We'll also play X's and Y's in the 2 o'clock hour. So get on the Annie Fry YouTube live chat and comment questions that you have for the opposite sex, and we will respond with our answers. Get to the bottom of it. Pull the curtain back on what the other sex out there thinks about any particular situation. If you've got an assumption, a presumption, a judgment, especially those, we want to hear them in the YouTube chat. You can vote as well. How should the Trump administration handle the illegal immigration crisis? Get your vote in. Your comments next.
This is the Annie Fry Show. Follow Annie on X at Annie Fry Show.
You're gone, gone, gone away. I watched you disappear. All that's left is a ghost of you. Now we're torn, torn, torn apart. There's nothing we can do. Just let me go, we'll meet again soon. Now
the YouTube poll for today is, how should the Trump administration handle the illegal immigration crisis? Let's go through some of the comments here. Gary said, any illegal who self-deports could be given a pathway to citizenship or legal work status. So you're saying you got to get out of here. And then if you leave and you want to come back, you wouldn't take away their ability to become a citizen if they re-entered and went through the system appropriately. Ms. Hostel says, I chose pathway to citizenship, which technically they have right now. Self-deport and come back the right way. Otherwise, get deported and no chance for citizenship. She had me there at the beginning.
Well, that is a pathway to citizenship. It's not the one I was thinking, but I guess that is a path.
The options are deport all illegal immigrants, legal status for some workers or pathway to citizenship. What are you doing?
I don't really see how we do anything other than deport all illegal immigrants at this point. The problem, if this question were asked in 2018, the answer might be a little bit different. There might be a little more room for discussion. But what the Biden administration did forces the hand of all of America now, because it's overwhelmingly in support of this choice, deport all illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I'm with Ryan on this one. It's you can't be here. You came here incorrectly. You came here not following the law. So it's time for you to go. You can either go on your own or we can remove you. So I do understand, and I like the idea. If you self-deport, get back in line, do it the right way, we'd be happy to have you. But if we have to remove you, then you're banned, you're gone, you never get to come back. So I'm of the mind that we need to just deport every illegal immigrant as possible. And
Doug says Trump got a mandate. That mandate was not, quote, deport illegals until the left labels you a heartless racist and rogue judges issue injunctions.
Yep.
It wasn't. The mandate was deport illegals. Nothing less will do. This is an emotional issue for the left. This is important to hear what I'm actually saying. Don't read into this. There are a lot of very emotionally driven, kind people, good people on the left who are 100% emotionally driven by this issue, and they're not interested in discussing why having 20 plus million people in this country illegally is bad for the people who are here legally. They only see the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. And I don't disrespect that. I think that the people who are in our country, or the citizens, the people who are here, who know loved ones or have people in their life that are here and maybe came here illegally, they love those people. They know that outside of that, they make good decisions. I understand the emotion behind saying, do we have to? But Biden made the problem so bad that the answer is, yeah, we do.
I understand that, too, and I respect it, but it's
We'll talk
tough.
More about it in a minute. Don't go away.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.